Guys, welcome to Better Bachelor. This is Joker with a face for radio and a voice for print. Tonight we're going to talk about real-world divorce. One of you gentlemen sent me in this link, and I did a little researching and digging on it. And I think it's valid information, and I want to review this with you guys because it's more about what happens. You know, we talk about the 60-80% of chance that she files divorce against you. Guys, women file it 60-80% of the time. And first marriages end in divorce about 50% of the time. Second marriages are a little bit over 60%. Third marriages are a little bit over 70%. So it's a coin flip whether it happens or not. And if it does happen, 60-80% of the time, the women actually initiate it, which means that in many cases, the men don't have a case prepared. The first one to file, for example, can go to a lawyer, and they don't have to file right away. They can discuss with a lawyer. They have time to gather evidence. They can get their case together. It might be months. It might be a year. They can get finances squared away and get some things moved around. And then when they file, well, the person that gets filed upon has very little time and doesn't have much of a defense. So I wanted to talk today about the legal ramifications of what happens when those papers get handed to you and she's made some claims against you that aren't true. And when that happens, what happens to the guy and why do they file? We're going to touch on that. So let's get recording here. We're going to talk about this. And this is a book summary. It's on realworlddivorce.com. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to follow to the page that one of you viewers sent in to me. And this is, scroll back up here to the top. And I have to change a couple of the words because YouTube and they're all their parenting over words. But it's the domestic home harm parallel track. And we're going to talk about this because this is a situation where even if you do nothing wrong, you are a good person, you are a good provider, and they just decide to file upon you. Well, this is what you may be looking at. And statistically, it's very good that you may be looking at this because, well, they talk about it later on where the government actually has funding to go after guys that may or may not have done anything, and the men don't have very much defense. So it almost is a given now that these claims are going to be made against you because it means more money and things that benefit the woman. And if she's really unhappy with you or she just decides that's it, I'm out, she's going to look for the best ways to end the situation in her best favor unless she's, you know, exceptionally kind. My ex and I didn't have kids and we both amicably split things and moved our own way. But had I had kids with her or were she vindictive or something, it could have gone much, much worse for me. So let's get reading here. They said the domestic, let me call it home harm is the words I'm going to use for the DV because I can't say either one of those words together because then I get shadow banned. Okay, so the home harm parallel track. Your typical divorce plaintiff wants four things: the house, the kids, the husband's paycheck, freedom to spend time in the house with her boyfriend, said one attorney. Now you notice when they say that your typical divorce plaintiff, if it were the man filing, they wouldn't have automatically thrown in the words husband's paycheck and time to spend boyfriend. They would have said spouse's paycheck and time to spend in the house with new partner. So already they're just from their own wording is stating that women are the vast ones that are the plaintiffs, the ones that are filing. Okay, keep that in mind. It might take her 2 years to get to that point in the family court with accompanying legal fees. She can get there in a day through the home harm system, probably without spending a dime. All she needs to learn is to say, "I am afraid of him." She gets a house, the kids, and money every month without ever having to give evidence, be cross-examined, or bring any additional witnesses to corroborate. This is according to an attorney. Furthermore, Jeannie Suk, a Harvard Law School professor, is quoted in Alec Baldwin's A Promise to Ourselves book. The home harm protection orders I mentioned can be obtained without a criminal charge ever being filed. A woman can ask a court to issue an order excluding her husband from the home based on her claim that he has harmed or threatened her, often without the husband having the opportunity to present his side. Of course, in principle, this process could be a good thing if the woman is in danger. But inevitably, some divorce lawyers advise women clients to apply for home harm protection orders because it can be used as a powerful tool in the divorce proceeding. Given the expansion of the definition of harm that I mentioned, it really doesn't take that much to show that a threat of harm exists and that a woman needs a protection order. It's not uncommon for home harm issues to come into a divorce case in this way. As I mentioned, it can be advantageous for the mother to allege conduct that suggests that the father seeking custody might be harmful. In the last 15 years, our courts have come to see home harm as a crucial issue in child custody decisions. Many states rightly have a presumption against awarding custody to parents who have engaged in home harm. The problem is the relative ease in which legal actors today seem able to view husbands as harmful or potentially harmful, since the definition of harm has expanded so much. Given that ease, it would be quite surprising if child custody disputes didn't often involve some allegation of harm. So what we see here is basically it has become such a broad definition that a woman can even say, I am afraid of him, and that is enough to get this kind of filed in with the divorce papers. Now, of course, upon hearing this, you'd think that a man would defend himself. But if there's no required evidence, if there's no required corroboration, if there's no requirement of cross-examining, she can just say this and you're guilty. That's all there is to it. There is no defense of this, basically, is what they're saying. So this is something to be very aware of because, you know, no one when they get married says, oh, this person is an absolute crazy person who is going to ruin me someday. I need to be with this person. No one says that. But tens and hundreds of thousands of people that end up getting divorced end up going through this. And afterwards they say, I don't know this person. I never knew this person. I don't know what happened to this person. And so it's something that once you get involved and once you're married, it's too late. That this is now the sword of Damocles hanging over your head at all times. And if you do anything wrong, this can come swinging down on you, and that is it. You are done. They continue on. In virtually every state that we studied, litigators told us about benefits offered by legislators to people who can testify credibly that the person they are seeking to divorce is harming them or harming their joint children. At the same time, litigators told us the costs of making a false accusation, even when a family court judge believes that it was false, are non-existent or minimal. According to our interviewees, repeated false allegations can be harmful when seeking sole custody of a child, but a rational custody-seeking parent would generally make at least one abuse allegation. So, it's, hey, you're getting a divorce. Well, I'm telling you, it's in your best interest to say this if it's true. But it's true, right? I'm sure there was one time you felt a little, you can see the lawyers doing this, right? Because all they're seeing is my client gets more, I get paid more, it can be dragged through the courts longer, which means more money for the lawyers. And that is their rationale for doing it, is simply greed. And of course, the woman saying, yes, I can remember one time when so on and so forth. Because that means more money for her and custody of the kids, which means even additional money. Let me skip down here a little bit to, this is the real world restraining order strategies and tactics. The nitty gritty of a divorce lawsuit that starts with a restraining order is explained in, quote, the New Star Chamber, the New Jersey Family Court and Prevention of Domestic Violence Act. And so, and this is Rutgers Law Review, 57, code 57.3. A wife willing to commit perjury, which to simply lie is, well, we know this is not a hard thing to do. People are very comfortable if it means lying will get them additional money. And I have there's a paragraph above this, I'll touch on that. A wife willing to commit perjury can spend months or even years with her lawyer planning to file a harmful complaint at an opportune moment in order to gain the upper hand in a divorce proceeding and preparing the presentation of her case, while an accused husband is given 10 days or less to prepare a defense. 10 days is not nearly enough time to prepare for an FRO hearing. It's not even enough time for most defendants to fully understand the gravity of the situation they're in. The lack of time is compounded by the stress, alarm, and confusion caused by suddenly and without warning being thrown out of the marital home by armed police officers. He's allowed to take his wallet with him, but is prohibited from taking his checkbook because the police officers fear that he might maliciously exhaust the marital assets. Now, keep in mind that during this time, she can still have the checkbook, she still has the home, and she now has the ability to exhaust marital assets. They don't go on to mention that. They continue on. He has not been advised that he has the right to have an attorney represent him. Let me start that again. He has not been advised he has the right to have an attorney represent him, and he doesn't realize he needs one. He couldn't afford one if he did, because he doesn't have a checkbook, obviously. And if she, depending on how she contacted the lawyer, they can lock funds so that neither party can remove them. But if she's already paid for her defense and he hasn't paid for his, he has no funds available, you see. But here's the important part of this. He couldn't afford one if he did, but he has no right, unlike a criminal defendant, to be provided with free counsel. In other words, if you are accused of committing a crime, you are given free legal representation. But this is a civil case, which means you do not have right to free counsel because it's not a legal issue. Because of that, you aren't given a lawyer. Now, when I did a video back 8 or 9 months ago, I talked about a friend of mine taking himself out because he got ground under the boot heels of the court system. And one of the things that many people just could not seem to understand, and I got so many comments on this video, I had close to 12,000 comments on the video before I ended up taking it down because people were reporting it, unfortunately, was that he had to pay for her attorney fees because the court decided that that was the way that it worked, at least in the state we were living in. Furthermore, he couldn't afford a lawyer, much as they're saying here, and he's not given a free one because it's a civil, not a legal court battle. And on top of that, it is not that crazy to have a false accusation put against you so that the women can get more out of this. That is what they're saying here. Again, all a wife has to be willing to do is perjure herself, which is to lie. But if she lies to the attorney and she lies to the court and no proof or evidence is needed, there's no way to prove her that she's not telling the truth. There's nothing to back you up. This summary, they continue on, this summary was consistent with what we heard from practicing litigators and also from consumers. Either because the plaintiff had already retained a divorce litigator or has obtained assistance from a taxpayer-funded home harm organization. The first two hearings are generally plaintiff and attorney on one side of the judge and either nobody, ex parte, or just the defendant on the other side. Maryland legislator Jill Carter explained this, quote, "There's an organization called the House of Ruth. They represent women for free and get her an automatic ex parte order barring the man from his home, the kids, and her place of work. He can come back 5 days later to challenge the order. Then the House of Ruth lawyer and his lawyer argue about whether it was a legitimate order to have it granted. No, says Carter, a lot of my constituents can't afford lawyers, and this is a civil proceeding, not a criminal one. So he is not entitled to a public defender. So she is represented by an attorney, and he is not. Also, within the 10 days, if he can't afford one, he's barely got time to get one and get any of his own defense together. And if he can't afford one, he's got to do this on his own while at the same time still going to work and maintaining his normal job, but all of a sudden he has to represent himself as an attorney. It's virtually impossible. The statistics just, or not the statistics, the time frame just makes it virtually impossible. The plaintiff, they continue on, the plaintiff is able to bring better evidence to these hearings because the plaintiff is the only one who knows that the proceeding is coming and therefore has time to prepare. I had one where the wife slapped herself in the face right before the police showed up, said an Arkansas litigator. The police took my guy to jail after seeing the mark on her face. We learned the truth because the parties reconciled, and she said, I knew that I could get you out of the house, and I was mad because you were having an affair with a nurse. Interviewees reported the future plaintiffs are counseled to push and shove the future defendants around the house in hopes that the men will raise to the bait and throw an actual hit. In one party recording states, future plaintiffs are encouraged to start arguments and then have activate a smartphone audio recording app where the future defendant begins to yell back. A bruised face or threatening sounding recording means a slam dunk victory. And this is maybe something that we've heard with, you know, Depp and Heard and some of these other cases where she will instigate a fight, start shoving him, start pushing him, start threatening. And then when he finally says enough and either pushes her back or defends himself or gets angry and yells, she uses the recording of the yelling, knocks herself a couple of times, right? And then 911, police show up, and there he goes. They've got the audio recording and they've got physical harm that he may never have inflicted. Now, again, this isn't saying that if the guy actually does something wrong, that he shouldn't be held accountable. But when there's when and of course, not all women are going to go through this. Like I said, I went through my divorce and didn't have any problems. But here we're talking about where they're where the women are so much able to plan ahead of the time that they can work all this out and have this strategized. And in the meantime, the guy's just going to work and coming home thinking everything's normal. It's a normal day and here we go. And this is gonna go a little bit long, but I have a story to read after this that I think shows very quickly how things can go south. Now, this is another important part of this, and then I'm gonna leave it for this article because I don't wanna go terribly long. It's the Harm Against Women Act of 1994. It made it easier to prosecute home harm, partly by eliminating traditional protections afforded citizens accused of crimes, and partly by providing about $1.6 billion per year, that's with a B, billion in year, funding to states and nonprofit organizations to assist them in prosecuting alleged harmers. Grants are administered by the U.S. Department of Justice Office of Harm Against Women. The bill was reauthorized in 2013. Attorneys reporting that alleging criminal home harm could be a useful tactic for a plaintiff seeking a larger child support order via negotiation. How did it work? We interviewed a soft-spoken father on an 11-month-old boy going through hearings as a criminal defendant. The prosecutors around Worcester, Massachusetts, got a grant from the federal government to prosecute harm against women, he noted, which means that they now go after every man who is accused because they get paid for it by this funding. And that's what I was talking about, that the woman gets money from the man, she gets custody of the kid, and the attorneys get paid, and the prosecutors get paid because of this. So it's in their best interest to try and find this against the man. They're not looking out for the man's best interest. They're looking out for their pocket's best interest, their own wallets. They continue on, which means that they now go after every man who is accused because they get paid for it. So now all of the child support plaintiffs in Worcester, Massachusetts, are going to the police saying they have been beaten up. His plaintiff alleged that he had grabbed her wrist. She has no evidence other than her own statement. She doesn't have any witness to say that I ever yelled at her, threatened her, or touched her. She has no marks on her skin. But anyway, my lawyers say that I will still have to go through at least four court appearances as an accused criminal. She offered to drop the charges if I would pay what she is demanding. But it works out to more than 100% of my after-tax income. She wants more than he makes. We followed up a few months later. The father had agreed to pay more than he had been previously ordered to. The mother, whose income was about the same as his, had dropped her allegations against him and agreed to let their child have a roughly 50-50 schedule. So she dropped the allegation. He gets to be 50-50 dad, but she used it as leverage to make him pay more. That's extortion. Pure and simple. I'm going to leave this link because there's a lot more we could go over here, and I'm not going to touch down on everything. But I do want to jump over to, let's see, I think I had one more article here. Oh, no, actually, let me read. It's back on this page. It says here, can Americans be trusted? What happens when you set up a system in which Americans can get cash by doing something less than honest? And this is from the Voyeur's Motel article from the New Yorker, April 11th, 2016. Now, it says Americans. Obviously, the test was on American, but this would probably include many, many people. These experiences prodded Foose, a motel manager, to concoct an honesty test. He would leave, and I don't know if this is an experiment. I didn't read through the Voyeur's Motel portion of this, but they decided to do some sort of an experiment or to see if people were honest. They say the experiences prodded Foose, a motel manager, to concoct an honesty test. He would leave a suitcase secured with a cheap padlock in the closet of a motel room. When a guest checked in, he would say to Donna in the guest's hearing, and I guess Donna was a receptionist or someone else that worked there. He would say to Donna in the guest's hearing range that someone had just called to report leaving behind a suitcase with $1,000 inside. Foose then watched from the attic as the new guest found the suitcase and deliberated over whether to break the lock and look inside or return the suitcase to the motel office. Out of 15 guests who were subjected to the honesty test, including a minister, a lawyer, and an Army Lieutenant Colonel, only two returned the suitcase to the office with the padlock intact. The others all opened the suitcase and then tried to dispose of it in different ways while keeping the cash. The minister pushed the suitcase out of the bathroom window into the bushes. So this is an interesting story, and I wanted to throw this little part in there as well, because many guys will say, yeah, but what about meeting a girl in church? What about meeting a girl that's never been with a guy, that's pristine and pure as the day is long? What about all the whataboutisms? That gives you no idea if they're going to be honest or not. And with the state or the prosecutors for the plaintiff in this case, and I don't know if that's through the state, but what they're saying is that, and I'd have to dig in this a little bit further, but basically what they're saying is with this $1.6 billion fund that to protect women and to make sure to go after the guys that have done harm to them, if that means extra cash, how many attorneys are willing to do more for money? Well, I'd say a lot of them would. And if a lot of them will do that, that means they're going to encourage this accusation. How many women are going to make this accusation if it means more money for them? We know this because I read stories about this all the time. So to assume that again, when you get married, no one marries somebody thinking, oh, someday, man, they're going to run me over the coals and I'm really going to regret this. No, they think, I'm going to get married. This is going to last forever. We're going to have kids. We're going to have a family. We're going to grow old together. We're going to sit in rocking chairs on the front porch overlooking our kids and our grandkids playing during a barbecue, and it'll look, a lot of us guys, and I include myself in that, a lot of us guys wanted that at one point in life. It's maybe what our parents had. It's maybe what our grandparents had. But now the way the court systems are structured, even if you make 50-50, like the same amount of income, and even if you're awarded 50-50 custody, she can still make these claims to basically extort more money out of you. And that's a real risk. So it's not just, you know, if it'll happen, but when it'll happen. And again, it's not always, but between 60 and 80% of the filings are by women, and 50% are, and that's of the stats they have. And then on the 50% that aren't divorced, is there any infidelity going on? Is there anything funny going on? And I don't, there's no stats on that, so to speak. But these are all things you need to keep in mind. And so you either need to be willing to take the biggest coin flip of your life and say, I'm willing to go through all this for the chance at happiness, for the chance at marriage, for the chance of having kids and being able to keep my kids and play with my kids and have that family and have the grandchildren. Some men may say, you know, to me it's worth the risk. But be advised, if it goes wrong, it may go very, very wrong. And if women know this, how many of them would be responsible enough and mature enough and adult enough not to use it, not to use this power over you, especially if you screw up, especially if they think they can do better, especially if they're unhappy, especially if you're, even if you're kind of a jerk sometimes, all right? I've dated women and they can be crabby and complain, and but you got to work through that stuff. But if you don't, and you're a little bit of a jerk, and I'm going to do this in another video because this is going long, but it's a story about a woman explaining how he was a great guy to her and she regrets her divorce, but all she did is ground her boot heel on top of him and make his life miserable. He never would have married her because of that. But these are all things to take into account. And I'm not going to tell you what you do, because some of you guys say, hey, I still want to find that marriage. I still want to get, you know, I'm willing to take those risks. That's good, but you have to understand the rules of the game in which you're playing. And the rules, this is not a stacked deck. Okay, the minute you say I do, you're playing with sevens and she's got a deck full of aces. And the odds of her beating you are virtually 100% if she decides to file and she's okay about lying a little bit. And this article proves it. I'll leave a link down below. I'll wrap it up here, guys, but I want to really hammer this home that you guys have to be realistic about this stuff, that the statistics, until the courts change, and I've even heard some of you say, well, we need to fix this. Okay, how do you fix it? You can't vote in the court system. These are attorneys and judges. You don't get to vote that stuff in, at least in most countries, in most areas, you don't vote that in. You can't vote for who's on the Supreme Court. Those are appointees. You have no control over that. All you can do is vote in the people that will hopefully put in good lawyers. But these are local criminal or local divorce court. You can't do anything about that. There is no. So how do you change the laws? You can't really, unless one of you has some great idea that I don't know about. The only way you can protect yourself and to say, I'm not okay with this, that I'm not okay with these laws, the only way you can protect yourself is by not doing it. That is the only way. So for any women that happen to watch this, according to my YouTube statistics, there are about 7,500 of you now that are subscribed, at least. To those women that watch this, when a guy says, no, I will never get married. No, I do not want to be married. It may not have anything to do with you. It may have to do with the court system and statistics. Or maybe it does have something to do with you. But either way, understand that you could be Miss Perfect, but an intelligent man knows that the minute he signs on that dotted line, the power is all in her hands. Guys, if you'd like to support my work, links are below as always. And if you have, thank you very much. And the best way you can support me, like, comment, share, subscribe. Check out my older videos as well. I do a lot of fun stuff, crazy stuff, statistics, everything else. Guys, I'll leave it there. This is Better Bachelor. I'm Joker. And remember, once you say I do, you're done.